company called Right Selection, where Jarek has also been over there speaking, and they talked really highly of him as well. And so I'm really excited to actually experience Jarek today and learn from him. Exciting to be talking to you, Jarek, and learning from you, along with all of our people in the coaching club, many of whom are on live now and many who are international will be watching the videos later. So welcome. Let me just say a few things about our amazing guest. I'm going to read you some formal stuff about him, which is amazing. And as we get into the interview, or not really an interview, it's really a presentation with me asking some questions along the way, you'll find out more about him. For example, he just had a baby this summer, and maybe he'll talk about that for a minute, what it's like to be a new dad. But on the formal level, I'll read this intro. He says, he's dedicated his life to helping people like you achieve success in your life, and more specifically, your business. At only 23 years old, Jarek was awarded the Congressional Award, which is a gold medal from the United States Congress. He's conducted trainings for companies and organizations, including Harvard University, the United States Marines, two very different places, the United States Air Force Special Forces, BMW, RE/MAX, Major League Baseball teams, and members of the U.S. Olympic teams. He's an advisor and board member of a variety of different companies. And today at 36, with over a decade of performance coaching experience, he continues to unlock secrets for maximizing performance and organizational success. And one of the most impressive things about Jarek is how he continues to innovate and live with intention. And he applies his own philosophy for living a life of adventure, philanthropy, and entrepreneurship. And whether it's cage diving with great white sharks, hanging with silverbacks in Rwanda, white water rafting down the Nile, which I didn't even know you could do, working as a volunteer in underdeveloped regions, Jarek is out in the world, living fully, loving deeply, and striving to do something that matters. So welcome, Jarek.
Well, first off, I am humbled that you read that for me, and I'm grateful that y'all invited me here. I've been a huge fan for years. I've read many of your series. I have different friends at different point who's been able to be co-authors in your series. And I just wanted to say thank you for having me. It's a privilege to be here. Really an honor.
Well, it's an honor to have you. So it goes both ways. Thank you.
And next time you go shark diving in a cage, I want you to take Jack, because that would be a sight.
Hey, if you guys are looking, if you're looking for adventures, I can certainly take you on some fun explorations.
Well, I have, would be all for it, but he, on the other hand, would be like, get me out of this cage.
I have been in Hawaii when a shark showed up and I wasn't in a cage. So we'll have to do that other one with you sometime.
The cage makes you feel a little better.
Now, yeah, I'll it really you, does. I didn't know how fast I could swim.
That's right. As cool as it sounds, I did great in the cage. I was curled up with seasickness on the boat ride back. So I could do great with adventure. Seasickness is another thing that took me out of the game very quickly.
I hear you. So you've been conducting what you call small business survival training since the start of COVID. And I know everyone, you know, they say really good things about it. And I wonder if you could share maybe some of the top things that you share with small business owners, with entrepreneurs. A lot of our people are just that. They're solo entrepreneurs, they're small business owners. Many of our speakers, coaches, et cetera. Could you share some of those ideas with us?
Absolutely. So my phone started ringing and I started getting text messages from all shapes and sizes, from businesses in our family. My uncle's tile shop in Southern California. He said, my doors are closed. They won't let me open them. And I don't know if I'll be able to even keep the store alive. It looks like I'm going out of business. I got a friend of mine who runs a health clinic that does colonics and hydrotherapy in London saying the same thing. I just shut the doors. No one wants to come in. Everyone's scared of this virus. I don't know what to do. And I just got too many of those. So I sat down with a sketch pad and I said, if I was going to give someone really tactically useful, not strategic, strategic is higher level thinking, wider thoughts, things that we can think through and find real deep solutions. Tactical are things that are immediately applicable, something I can do right now and get an immediate result. And I said, they need tactical right now. If we were to frame this properly, there's a hospital triage room, there's a rehab center, and then there's a training facility for high performance. When COVID hit, we got knocked into a hospital triage room, meaning we need quick tactical solutions that can keep this business alive. Like right now, we need to keep this thing. The heart needs to stay beating. The breath needs to stay in the lungs. We need to keep it alive. Right now, we're starting to, for some industries, enter the rehabilitation phase where we can start to rehab it. We can move them. We can start trying a little bit different things. We can adjust our businesses slightly to figure out what's going to work and what's not in this new environment. And eventually we're going to turn a corner and be able to step on the, or squeeze down on the accelerator, and it's really going to go. And that'll be fun. And we're teeing that up for next year. Hopefully it'll start to turn for some industries and we'll be able to catch them and help them go. But for right now, we're somewhere between triage hospital rooms and the rehabilitation center. With that, the very first thing we did, and I wrote an article for entrepreneur.com about this, was we might be past it now, but for some people, not so much. We had to say, how could we save them as much cash as humanly possible? And excuse me, the concept of cash in a business, I was trained when I was younger and studying this deeply with one of my mentors. He trained me that, you know, cash is like oxygen. It doesn't matter much until you run out of it. And when you run out of it, oops. And we got to let our team members go. We got to let our family go. We can't cover the bills. We can't pay the mortgage. We're in a tough spot. And so the first thing we do, and I did this with a client in London years ago. He came to me wanting to invest in real estate. And he just told me, I just don't have the money. He's a major partner at a major law firm. He flies privately. He lives a great life. And I'm thinking, what do you mean you don't have the money? You clearly have a lot of money. And, you know, someone wise said, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep and what you do with it. And he wasn't keeping hardly any of it. And so when we found this out, I said, let's do a simple exercise. I call it a stoplight exercise. Imagine in the US, it's red, green, and yellow are the three colors we're going to play with. First, we're going to comb through and print out all of your P&L, your credit card receipts, your expense reports. We're going to print them all out, detailed summaries. So you see the detailed line by line items. We're going to take a red highlighter and we're going to comb through and we're going to highlight anything that we call a WTH, which is why the heck is that on there? That should have never been there. What is that? Why are we paying two Netflix accounts right now? Who in the world okayed that charge? Like, it's the simplest, littlest things that none of us think are there. But when you comb through line by line with a highlighter, you find them. One of our dear friends and Jocelyn's friend and I, Michelle Soro, she did this and found $56,000 for 2020 in the red. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. There was a gym in Texas, a lady named Tony, who she did this. She found, I think it was $5,400 a month, which comes out to about $60,000 for the year in her red section that she got to comb out. I went, bingo, 60 grand. That could do a lot for a small business right now if we get to save it and not have to spend it somewhere. I have a friend in Canada. She's also a coach. She works for major corporations coaching. She saved just $3,000 total. But I paused for a second because she's like, it's only $3,000. And I said, well, wait a second. That might have been a mortgage payment. That might have been food for a couple more months. That might have been a lot. $3,000 can go far if you use it right. And she was upset because she heard all these other numbers. And I was like, don't be upset. That's awesome. If you took 45 minutes or an hour of your life and you got back $3,000, that's a pretty good per hour rate you just raked in there. That's a really good rate for 60 minutes of highlighting. I said, what else can we do? We went to yellow. Yellow was, we could possibly live without it. We might not need it, but we might want to keep it. We haven't decided yet. We're kind of in the middle. We might get rid of it. We might keep it. We're not so sure. It's kind of in the middle. Now, I said in the beginning, base this on your next 3, 6, or 9 months performance. If you do really well, celebrate, keep it. If things get tighter and tighter, start eliminating some yellow really quickly. Cut out the yellow and it'll put some money back in your bank account. And then we get to green. Green is, we can't live without this. This is our food, mortgage. These are the things that keep the heart pumping in this business. We just can't cut it. If we cut this, we're pretty much on a course for bankruptcy or death at some point business-wise. And what happens is the largest number we had so far was a mid-market firm in Amsterdam who saved 300,000 euros within 45 minutes of doing that exercise as a team. I was like, that's a lot of euro. 300,000 for 45 minutes of effort that was sitting right on the table the whole time. All the way down to 3,000 with Yulia in Canada, who was able to save that. And so one of the first things we do in a time like this is say, how can we take someone through a simple exercise that'll tactically put a significant amount of savings right back on their table immediately?
That's a good worth 45 minute exercise, isn't it? Yeah. I know what we're all going to be doing later today.
And I haven't met a person yet. Going back to that gentleman in London, when he did this, he found $50,000 a month in the red. And he told me he didn't have enough to invest in rental properties. I was like, dude, you could invest in a rental property every month at this point. Depends on what size, but stack up 4 months and you have a really good down payment. Like, geez. And he didn't even know. And to be honest, it was just a couple buttons that needed to get clicked that someone was supposed to click that no one did click. And it just stacked up with payments and penalties. And all of a sudden, there's a huge $50,000 a month chunk getting hunked out, and he didn't even realize it.
Wow.
So you talked about tactical things people could do. This is one of them. What else do you recommend?
My goodness, there's so many. When we look at this, there's then saying, for most people, when we think of sustaining a business, we talk about cash and then we talk about core clients. Most people trying to grow a business, once you have momentum, it's less about how many new clients can I get and more about how can I keep the clients I have forever. I don't know if you've noticed this. Most people are so concerned with getting the next client, they're not taking very great care of the client they have. And every time they get a new client to join, the current client leaves, which puts them back in the same exact position they were in the month before. And so if we sat down and we asked a question, which is, what would you have to do to make it nearly insane for someone to ever consider leaving? How would you have to treat them? What would you have to deliver? What kind of results would they need to consistently achieve or experience in their life or business that it would be insane to ever walk away from this? And what I've learned about that is it's less to do with what you're doing and more to do with what you're willing to do. And when I say the word willing, my good friend Alison Armstrong said, willing is not, okay, fine, I'll try, I'll do it, I'll see what happens. Willing is willpower. I'm going to will myself to action to do this every day for them. I'm going to will myself to over-deliver. I'm going to will myself to give it my all. I'm going to will myself to take care of them and care about them. And when you use willpower in that context, we sit down and I always draw a little triangle. And we just ask, what does this person need? What does this person want? What does this person desire? What do they need? A need is like oxygen. You know, a need is, we all need a safe place to live, we could say. That's a need. If you take away someone's safe place to live, they don't function very well. It starts to break them down as a person. So what do they need when doing business with you? What is the oxygen in your business relationship with them? Number one reason why relationships end is unmet expectations. You know, unmet expectations. Someone had an expectation that wasn't delivered, and that's why they choose to go somewhere else. How do we understand what their needs and expectations are in the beginning? How do we get so clear on that and understand it so well and then become willing to not only meet but exceed their expectations from that start? And from needs, then we go to wants. We need a safe place to live. We want a nice place to live. I want a place that has a view. I want a place that has an extra room. I want a place that I can put a little gym in the garage. Like, I don't know what you want, but it's a want. It's not a need. I don't need my gym in the garage as much as I can tell myself I do. I'm sure I can go in my room and do push-ups if I had to, but I want my gym in the garage. It's nice to go downstairs and work out. And so what do they want in your business relationship? What do they want? What are the things they really want that this is more than a need? This is something they want when they work with you. The third one is a desire. This is, there was a lady who's a life coach that works with Oprah. And she wrote about this in one of the articles, and it was so good. It said a desire is when you're flipping through a magazine and you feel a natural pull towards something, but you don't even know how to put words on it. You're walking down the street and you observe something. You observe the way someone treats each other in a relationship. You observe someone smiling back at someone they love. And you go, ooh, I feel compelled towards that. I feel pulled towards that. That feels good in my heart. That feels good in my nervous system. I want some of that. That's the desire. Now, you don't necessarily know what that is. Do you just want someone to smile at you? Do you want deep, true, lasting love and partnership? What did you actually want? And your brain goes, I don't know. It's kind of a feeling. It's a desire. It's something that compelled me, but I'm not quite sure what it was. That's what we have to also figure out with our people, our clients, our customers, our community here. What do they desire? What are the things that naturally compel that positive energy inside of them that kind of ignite or inspire them towards curiosity? They see it and go, ooh, I wonder what that would be like. And so when we take care of, we call this our clients, but our core clients, the people that they depend on us and we depend on them. And if we're going to take care of our core clients, we have to know what they need, what they want, and what they desire. And we have to be willing to deliver it better and more than anyone else on earth is willing to do. There's the key. Little asterisk, highlight, circle. To be willing to deliver more and better than anyone else on earth is willing to do. Not capable of doing, willing to do. And if you're willing to deliver more for them than anyone else, my goodness, it would be insane to go anywhere else because you could never get the experience you get from here.
So I'm curious in the work that you do, how you recommend people find that out. I mean, I just give you an example. You may know the name Roger Hamilton. He's a trainer. And yeah. I remember him telling me once that all of a sudden his enrollments were down for his trainings and he couldn't understand why. So he spent about 3 days just calling people saying, are you still taking trainings? Are you still spending money on that? Is it in your budget? And they all went, yeah. He said, well, you're not taking ours. Why not? So, well, all yours are really basic. I've learned everything you have to teach. I'm looking for niche-oriented now information from my industry, my environment, my kind of client, et cetera. And he said once he found that out and started delivering that, then all of a sudden his sales went up again. So I'm just curious, how do you recommend people find out what the clients want, need, and desire?
My goodness, spend time with them. Go hang out with them. There's no reason that you shouldn't have 5 clients that are considered family, that you literally hang out with, talk with, travel with, meet up with around the world, talk to, go on a vacation with once, twice a year. Now that sounds weird because people say, don't blur those lines. But if you had people that were that close to you, we once did a 15 country, 25 day cruise with a small group of our clients. We were family by the end of that trip. We volcano boarded in Nicaragua, where you hike up for 2 hours up the side of a volcano, and then you get on a sled or a snowboard and snowboard down the side of a volcano back to the Jeep. We went and donated school supplies and threw a Christmas party in Ecuador for families that couldn't afford it. We went and built schools in Guatemala, and we found out while we were there painting a wall that we kept seeing all these little kids with baggies of water and saying, why does everyone have a Ziploc baggie full of water at this school? And they said, because they can't afford the water tank that goes on the roof that can house water. So where the school has water, I said, this school has no water. They said, no. And I said, how much is a water tank? And they said, $300 US, but it's way too expensive for us. I turned around to my group and I said, hey, I can steal all the joy right now and do this myself. How many of you would want to participate in making sure that every kid here gets water moving forward? And they all said, I'm in. And said, okay, great. Reach in your pocket and let me know how much you're in for, and whatever the difference is, I'll cover, but let's do this. And they only let me have about $20 of joy myself in that moment. And they took the rest. And I had a lady at the end of that trip from Arizona who also had a vacation home in Mexico, who was very well-to-do, a beautiful, wonderful woman, and her husband. She somehow met us on board this cruise ship and kind of mixed in with our group. She said that day changed her entire life because she never met a group of people who cared that much and would randomly and sporadically do something for good in the world just because it was the right thing to do. And so by the end of that trip, I knew these people just as well as they knew them. I knew who gets seasick like me. I knew who was having fun moments of their life. I knew who was having challenging moments of their life. And what happens is when we created that community, all of a sudden that created a core that we know each other. They know what I look like at 2 a.m. walking to go get an extra bottle of water from the lobby bar on a cruise ship. They've seen me not feeling so well and still choosing to continue to teach a class that day when I'd have to run out of the room every so many minutes to go let some lunch loose. But in that kind of connection, it works. I know them, they know me, they're family, and they left like family. That group without me has now traveled the world multiple times together in different places doing their own adventures. And because they allowed me to get to know them so well and them to get to know me, we've created a bond like nothing else. And so when I get to know my core clients that well, now I say, ah, where do I find more people like us? And it becomes a tribe, it becomes a community, and we get to replicate. And so it's spending time with them and doing things with them and connecting with them. And maybe you have a million clients. Well, great. Figure out what subcultures exist. Get to know, like, weed through them. Look through their names, read their profiles, check them out on Instagram, talk with them every day, see what they're going through. Create little mini groups where you're constantly sharing and watching what they're sharing and talking about. And all of a sudden you get involved, kind of like this community you have here. You start to hear what the threads of conversation are. You hear the pulse and heartbeat of what's important to people. And you can now make sure that when you hear things that aren't present, you go, ooh, I would love to surprise them with that. I would love to figure that out for them. I would love to help find a solution there. And I think we're transitioning from a point where it's, here's what I do. If you want that, come here. If not, go somewhere else. To how can I fall deeply, deeply in love with the needs, wants, and desires of my community? And in order to keep your core clients, you have to fall head over heels in love with their needs, wants, and desires every day. And you have to be agile and adjust with them as they change as well.
Great. So I'm going to ask you one more tactic question, and then we'll move in some different directions.
Before you do that, Jack, can I ask something?
Oh, go ahead, Patty.
So, Jared, can I give you my husband's phone number? Because he wants to always know, why the heck do you invite the students, your students, on vacation with us?
That's why.
And I'm like, because I love them. Because they've become my, I mean, sometimes we have to joke, like, everybody that's the closest in my life paid me to know them first, which is kind of weird. Sometimes I feel like I should pay them back because I can be a high maintenance friend. But it's true. It's like, I think just like, if we just walk away with that one thing, like how to do better and do more, you know, during COVID, I was running mastermind groups monthly and I changed them to weekly. And everyone thought I was insane because I was sitting in a bar stool like 12 hours a day. But I thought, well, what else can I do to support these people in a time where they're, you know, they needed to feel safe. They needed to be able to talk about what was up for them. And so I think lots of times, I mean, just that one thing of keeping the clients that you have, how to serve them better, how to bring in other people like you, like this group for us has probably been the most amazing group we've ever run. And it is the community. You know, it really is about building that out. So I appreciate that, just that reminder for us, because It's something we all need to be reminded of. So thank you for that.
Of course. My grandma taught me that. My grandma still is 80. I think she's 82 or 83 years old. She still cold calls 3 days a week. She was on the cover of Newsweek magazine for life insurance salesperson of the year in the United States. And the way she earned that was she was driving down the road in her city in Southern California. It was raining and she saw a young woman running in the rain with a paper over her head trying to cover for herself. She pulled over and said, you know, would you like a ride? She goes, I would love one. This rain came out of nowhere. She got in the car, drove her home. And while she was driving, she talked to her and said, you know, how are you? Who are you? What do you do? I do this. My name is this. And they talked back and forth. Turns out, she goes, oh, have you ever considered insurance? She said, no. She said, can I come by and show you sometime? She said, sure. And they just became friends. She landed up going back, presentation, sold her policy. But my grandma only has a handful of clients. And when I was a little kid, we used to handwrite letters to them every month. So I remember being envelopes and helping make sure all the letters were folded properly, putting in all the envelopes and mailing them to these people every month. She still sends them birthday gifts by hand. She goes to the store and finds them. She still calls them and sees how they're doing every few weeks. She has deep relationships, which I think is something critically missing in today's society. But the deep relationship she's formed with these people, their friendships, their family, when they need something, they call her and she'll go help them figure it out. She does a lot for them. And in watching that, that lady happened to pass away by a crazy accident so many years later. And that life insurance policy covered her two daughters to go to college, gave them a car, and gave their grandparents enough money to take care of them. And it's like, wow, if she didn't care enough to pull over and help a random person running on the side of the road, those girls wouldn't have had the funds to be able to take care of them when their mom tragically left this earth. And their grandparents didn't have the ability to take care of them either. And it was like, wow, that's awesome. That's something I grew up around watching and going, that is so cool. That seems normal to me just because I got to see it growing up so much. And so when we bring that, you're walking down the road and someone's having a tough time. I heard some of you are coaches or therapists or that kind of background. You have the capacity to help them. And I know all of our business training would say, no, invite them to a session, hand them your card, tell them the fee. My gosh, if you have a chance to help someone, help them. Earn their business by helping them change their world in that moment. And if they come back and need more, my goodness, you've earned it. And I've learned that over and over and over again. And I try to practice that in everything we do.
Well, I definitely want to write your grandmother a thank you note for raising such a good grandson. That's very cool.
Now, I'm remembering my mother. I grew up for 2 years in Omaha, Nebraska, when I was like somewhere about 4 years old. And my mother told me this story that it was a snowstorm and she was waiting for a bus and this car pulled over and said, can I give you a ride downtown? She said, sure. And it was the mayor, was Hubert Humphrey, who later ran for vice president of the country. Wow. And she said, boy, I voted for him every year. You better believe it, you know. But it was that level of human caring. You know, I'm not above you. I'm here to serve you. And that servant leadership quality that we need. So I'm going to just press you one more time. So we've talked about the green light, red light, yellow light, cash, you know, the assessment. And we've talked about the importance of loving your clients and serving them and finding out what their desires, wants, and needs are. What's one more tactical thing you could suggest before we move on to some different kinds of topics to talk about?
So I'm split on this one because I have two. One might not be appropriate. So is it okay if I just ask how many people on here, if you could tell me in the comment section, how many of you have a team of employees? One employee, 10, 100, doesn't matter. But how many of you have a team? I'm going to need your guys' help on that one. It looks like we might be split. Let me choose. So I'll do a mini version and then I'll do something else that'll be useful for everybody. So people with a team, little caveat, how well you can take care of your team, even if it's a team of one. I saw something when you look at your community, your team, the people who wake up every day and work with you and for you and alongside you and doing good in the world and doing something that matters within your company. I saw two things go down that just, it caught my attention and oh my gosh, one of them broke my heart and one of them put a giant smile right back in the place where it was broken. And so the first one I saw was when things got tough, they made a smart business move, but they executed it really poorly. They had to let go 80 out of their 160 employees, so half their team. They wrote out an email that said, "Today will be your last day. We apologize for the short notice. If you have any problems with that, email our attorney. Here's their information. Thank you." I almost threw up. Like, that cracked my heart in the wrong way. That hurt me. That frustrated me. That, and my goodness, every part of me wanted to blast this person who did this in all the wrong ways. And I realized anger and frustration doesn't help anything or anybody. So I had to breathe through that and find my way back to calm. And I was like, my goodness, people can just be mean. And I understand the tactical business move they're making. I'm not mad at them for being smart about their business and trying to protect their cash and capital. But the way you do something matters a lot more than what you do sometimes. And that was just horrible. On the flip side of this, I saw a gentleman get on national television. He had tears rolling down his cheeks because he had to close something around 47 locations across the country. He had to let go of thousands of employees, many of which he hired himself and were like family to him. And he just had tears rolling down his cheeks when he was talking about this. And he says, "I just said, what can we do for them? How can we take care of our team? I might not be able to keep you on as a team member and pay you, but my goodness, there's got to be something I can do to take care of you as a person." And they scrambled for a little bit and they came up with an idea. They called it a highlight card. They put a person's name, a highlight of something they've done while working there, an endorsement from the company, their top values, their top goals, just a highlight of who this person is. They kind of summarized it on this card. And then they gave it to each person when they said, "I'm so sorry, we can't keep you on the team, but we hope this helps." And then they helped shop the person. They emailed their email database. They emailed their vendors. They emailed their list and said, "If anyone's looking for a superstar in one of the following categories, please take a look at our list. Look at the highlight cards and see if there's anyone who could fit on your team. We'd love to help our team find a new home." I was like, wow. Both people had to let go of their team. That was done dramatically different. And one of them put the smile back on a place that there was a big crack in the middle of my heart for a couple weeks there. And that one hurt. I was like, man, these are your people. These people show up and work with you every single day. And that's as good as you can take care of them. An email says, "I'm sorry, please leave." Versus this other person, wow. What a beautiful human and what a beautiful team to sit down and scramble. And I guarantee the team that was doing all this work, they weren't getting paid for that. They ran out of money. They didn't have the funds to pay their team to write all these scorecards. But they loved their team so much, they found some time and put in the extra effort to do it for them. And so tactically speaking, if you have to let go of someone, please take the time to create a highlight card for them, especially right now. Because we happen to be growing and hiring people, which is awesome. But if I got handed a little highlight card from somebody that said, "Hey, my previous employer just ran out of oxygen. They couldn't make it. But they gave me this as a gift. And they said, hand it to whoever you go to next. They'll know what to do." If I got that, I know that this person is cared for. I know that they're coming from somewhere that they put a good effort in and really put their time and energy into. I know a lot about them if their company's willing to create a highlight card like that for them. And I'd be willing to take them in much quicker than just a resume. Because you got someone who cared enough to do that for them. And so if you have the ability to care about your team and they have done a great job, but you need to let them go, my goodness, create a little highlight card for them. It's so simple, but such a great gift. That's for people with a team. People without a team, you know, we did a whole day on this. We did day training where we went through, and if you imagine a little plus and minus, what you want to do, just like we comb through your expenses, if you were to comb through everything you offer, whether it's a phone consultation, a training of some sort, a book, a coaching session, doesn't matter, whatever you offer, if you're a construction worker, the assessment fee that might go in, anything like that. If you were to comb through everything you do and you were to find the most profitable things you do, and you were to find the least profitable things you do, if all we did tactically right now was put more fuel in the fire for the most profitable things we do, there's a good chance it'll create the extra margin that'll give us the extra cash flow to squeeze through a tough time. And that sounds so simple, because it is conceptually. But taking the 2 hours to sit down and look through all the offerings we have, or the three things we do, doing the math to figure out which one is the most profitable thing we do and the least profitable thing we do, and deciding to put the extra fuel behind the most profitable thing we do, takes effort. And some people just don't want to put in the effort. They just keep selling whatever they can to stay alive. But I promise, I remember I was with our friend Rom at Right Selection, and we went over one trip and was booked out the whole trip. We had a separate trip where we only got booked one time. I said, Rom, got him. What happened? Out of all these amazing people here, only one of them wanted to meet with us. And they said, I don't know. We're having trouble. It's not the same. The market's changed. Lots of stuff going on. And I looked at him and I said, should we just drop the price? Like, could you call someone and say, hey, we got a half off. Like, he's here. Let's do this. And he grabbed my arm and he looked me in the face and he said, Jarek, never do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, it takes just as much effort to sell it for full price as it does half price. Leave the price the same. He said, but I will tell you something. When they get you and they decide to work with you, give them more than they ever imagined you would. And they'll talk about you and they'll tell everyone else. And so when it comes back to this, find your most profitable thing you do. Do not discount it. But can you add something intangible that doesn't cost you anything, but is still wildly valuable? Can you put that on top of it so that when people in a hard time still decide to work with you, my goodness, you put something on top of it and just wow them. You over-deliver and rock their world. And to know what will wow them, we have to go back to what they need, want, and desire. I think one of the biggest oopses we make as a business is we give someone something that wows us that they don't care about. And that's a big oops. Just oops. We were like, it's so cool. And they're like, yeah, thanks. And they set it on the thing and never touch it again. So if we go back to what they need, want, desire, and we find out, we can give them something that to us seems so simple and to them is the most amazing thing in the world. So hopefully that's helpful for people with a team and people who might not have one.
It's great. I mean, it really is simple, yet it's so true. You know, I think for a lot of us, especially in this whole world of self-help right now, there's just so much, and there's so many mediums and avenues to disperse content and info. It's like a tornado half the time. And it really is looking at, you know, what's making the biggest impact and what is profitable and really spending time doing that.
And there's some, I apologize.
No, it's just like, I think with Jack and I, when we started Chicken Soup, you know, of course we published 250 books, and I think we almost tainted some of the realities for people. Like the first book took 4 years and then 3 years of marketing. It wasn't like we went, let's do 20 books, you know, and had we done that, we probably wouldn't, none of them would have seen the light of day. And I always say to people, you know, are you going to have a baby and leave it in the alley and go have another one? Or are you going to raise it? And so I think that's awesome information, simple yet profound. I think Jack is going to say something. Do you have a thought, Canfield?
No, Jarek started to respond and then he stopped. So I'm wondering what you were going to say.
There's something I was toying with this. How comfortable is this group with money? I know they all have big hearts, it sounds like. Are they really comfortable with money, or there's still some money kind of stuff that comes up when they talk about growing or working?
Let's see. Let's put it in the chat.
How, 0 to 10. 10 being wildly comfortable, 0 being like, it gives me the heebie-jeebies some days. I'm seeing the whole range there. Okay. If it's okay, I'd love to throw something up here. I was thumbing through this last night, and it's something that I feel might land really well here. And is everyone here familiar with spiral dynamics or levels of consciousness?
I am, but I'm not sure everyone is. No, I don't think so.
Okay. So they were saying...
So they use this concept to help end apartheid in South Africa. It was very cool. I'm not, obviously, we don't have time to go through the whole thing, but if I can screen share something, I'll show you something I was messing with. This is the business version of spiral dynamics, how it looks in a business setting. And so when you're starting in business, there's financial stability. Will this work? Which is number one, viability. Relationships, building customer satisfaction, connection, respect. Once we figure that out, we have performance, achieving excellence, quality, results orientation, competence, self-esteem. Eventually we hit evolution, which is courageously evolving, accountability, transformation, innovation, alignment, which is authentic expression, openness, creativity, integrity, collaboration, which is cultivating communities, community involvement, partnership, and then contribution, which is living purpose, being of service, future generations. If we look at the bottom three, the question as an individual we might have to ask is, am I enough? Do I have enough? And am I loved enough? And those are three really big questions. Yes, these are the Barrett values. There's a Barrett value center that this is from. Thank you for reminding me to say that out loud. Yeah, I'll share this with y'all so you can pass it around and have this. This is Barrett Value Center. I'll say it. It's in the little, Glenn put it there. And so when you look at this, the three questions, I am enough, I have enough, I'm loved enough. And this would be, let me grab my pen. There we go. So this would be, I need a better marker. Here we go. I have enough. This would be, you know, I'm loved enough. And this would be, I am enough. Those are things that we have to work through in our own self. And the people we connect with and I watch in a business setting, when they don't feel like they have enough, they tend to always be trying to get it from everyone they can immediately as fast as they can because their bucket's empty and they're trying to fill it to stay alive. When people feel like they do have enough, they tend to just want to share. And if there's business to be done, wonderful. And if there's not, that's okay. I just love to share this to share this. When someone doesn't feel like they're loved enough, they're always belittling other people and tearing them down. Well, they're not that good. It's not that, I mean, it was good except for, you know, they always have these things they do, little nigs, little teardowns of others and competitors and people. They're constantly just hacking other people down instead of building them up. And I went, ooh. And then I love Kathleen. I actually did a training with her. She taught me some of this. Great person. And then I am enough. I am enough. That's when someone, again, doesn't have to compare, but they just show up and they know who they're being, not what they're doing, not a human doing, a human being. Who they're being is more than enough. And they're willing to share that with the world. I put numbers on this yesterday for the very first time, which felt kind of wonky, because I think something with this much goodness doesn't necessarily need numbers. And you can hear my own feelings about numbers. And then I said, wait a second, why not? I said, watch this. If you got your business, and I realize businesses are all shapes and sizes on here, so these do not have to be the numbers. I'm just going to take big round numbers to make this easy. If we went for $20,000 a month and we went $30,000 a month and then $40,000 a month, and I said, at $20,000 a month, you're making a significant income that allows you to take care of you and the ones you love in your tightest family circle. You can take care of yourselves really nicely at that number. $30,000, you can start to expand to a few groups in the community you deeply care about. $40,000, my goodness, you can care about something more than maybe you, the family next door, and the church you belong to or community you belong to. At $50,000, I like that word evolution, because all of a sudden at $50,000 a month in earnings, you can do a lot in the world. I was like, ooh, you can start to make a significant impact far beyond your tightest circle. Like you can go into a whole city with $50,000 and have extra to help in ways that you couldn't before when it was tighter. Now, I'm a big fan of hands-on volunteering. I lived in a village in Uganda for 3 months teaching organic farming. I love hands-on helping. I didn't have the money to help like that back then. Now that we do, I can tell you it's just as important to be able to have the money to help as it is to show up and help. I say it's equally important to both be there. If we were to move forward and you go into the 60, 70, 80, I liked the way that you then start to align with organizations, people, and causes much bigger than yourself. You start to collaborate, which starts to expand the way you can help in the world financially. And eventually you're making massive contributions. I looked at that and went, my goodness, I would love to invite people to play this game. And the game here is, how do we help them build reoccurring revenue streams that can level up every one of these levels, with the sole purpose that underneath it, the more we make, the more we give. I had a friend of mine who started a nonprofit that's built hundreds of schools around the world in the past few years. He started off with $25 and a desire to help. He showed me something. He said, if we look around in the world, there's for-profit entities. For-profit, they're really good at making money. And he said, there's also these other things over here that are non-profit, right? Not-for-profit. Non-profits. These people are really good at making an impact. And I said, okay. And a lot of times, the non-profit spent a lot of time going to the for-profit asking for help. I spent a lot of my time in my first position my first job was security at Blockbuster Video. So that wasn't too sexy, but I did get theft to drop by over 72% within the first 3 weeks of me being there. So apparently a big kid with a shaved head could scare away DVD thieves. My first real job was in our family's nonprofit. I love that work. I didn't necessarily like the paycheck, but I love the work. And so I always wanted to be in the business of helping people. The part that frustrated me was the paycheck. And why did we have to spend all our time calling, essentially begging for money? I'm like, that's not cool. Why don't we have something that generates its own money so we can use our money to go do the good we want to do in the world? Doesn't seem right that we have to call and ask for everyone else's money. And I realized there's a thought process around that. But my friend showed me this. He called an organization that has the under engine of a for-profit, yet the heart and head of a non-profit. He called it a for-purpose. And I went, ooh, I like this. This is an organization dedicated to a purpose much bigger than just itself, that works wildly intelligently to make a ridiculous amount of profit so that it can pour that profit in the causes that it believes really matters in the world. And I went, yes, I found my game. This is cool. A for-purpose enterprise. And it's more to do with the thought process from the beginning of how can I set it up so that I'm going to be as profitably as humanly possible and use that profit for causes that are worthy of investment consistently. And it's not, you can partner with nonprofits if you want and donate it to them and let them go do the work if you want them to have the shovel and do the dig, or you can find local people you believe in directly and go straight to them. And one of my favorite things in the world is seeking out and finding places like that little school we went to in Guatemala, where $300 is about to change 40 kids' lives because they don't have to carry a Ziploc bag to school every day with all the water they can drink for the whole day. You know, I there was a gentleman and friend from Uganda who he goes out and he finds people who don't have enough funds to, you know, to handle a hospital bill. We covered a little kid's hospital bill to get his scan for his brain tumor a few weeks ago. I love the ability to do that without having to think about it. I don't have to second guess it. I don't have to say, oh, shoot, is it still in the budget? I go, done. Oh, my gosh, done. Call me. I can make that happen. I'd love to. Now, what happens is when you start behaving like that, you get a lot of emails. And you got to get good at sorting through them. But this is where it becomes about community. Because my dad has a nonprofit that does lots of stuff. They feed 100 million people a year. They provide 100,000 gallons of water per day in India. They plant millions of trees. They just raised $18 million in one night for his birthday to rescue thousands of kids from sex trafficking. Like, that's a huge nonprofit. I'm talking about all of our businesses right here. Something we could do that gives us the firepower that when we see a need that's worth investing in, we don't even have to think about it because we've been saving for it and we're ready to go on purpose. We have it. And that's what that for-purpose enterprise looked like for me. And so when I looked at those, I'll throw that back up there. When I looked at the Barrett value system, and for the first time I put numbers next to it, I said, wow, my relationship with money is I see it now. This path, just like they say when they do the training with Barrett, is all about how do we handle us, meaning our own personal stuff. And all of a sudden, this is the circle where we evolve. And now we're doing so well. It's all about how can we just give at a bigger level than we ever have before. And that this kind of caught my attention as far as a business path. And I think it might fit for a lot of people who are on here who might be within these ranges. If you're already so big that these ranges are too small, just add a zero to every level, 200,000, 300,000, 400,000. You can play that game. And it just ups the game and keep adding zeros. I mean, my goodness, challenge yourself. But at every level, it's the same context of figuring out how do we do this? How do we push this forward? How do we do something? And every level we get to go up, we get to find a bigger cause that we get to invest in or just have more firepower or loose change or a big account filled with stuff we can do right then on the spot. I love to be able to help. And it's fun to not have to second guess it because you know you've already planned for it.
Well, and Jared, don't you think also that it, like we always tithed for chicken. So for every book we had a charity and then our publisher matched whatever we did. And so, you know, Mark Victor Hansen would say 1 + 1 = 11, you know? And so, and lots of times those checks got to be so big, I would just say, just write the check from the publisher because I don't want to see it because I don't want to second guess and get greedy for a second. But do you feel like it comes back tenfold? You're frozen.
I'm back.
Yeah. So I was saying, like, do you feel like when you give, the theory is like if you give away 10%, it comes back tenfold. I mean, yeah. Have you seen that happen? Whether I don't care if you're making $40 a week, if you give $4, you know, it just creates a different vibration and energy.
It does. I remember I had a time and I'll never forget this. I had a time when I was in college where I sat down and I didn't know a lot about money. but I knew really clearly looking at the numbers that I had more bills than money in my bank account. That was clear when I looked at both numbers. One was larger than the other, and it was the wrong one, or at least not the one I wanted to be larger than the other. And I remember sitting there and going, dang it, not cool. And I remember my dad told me as a kid, the fastest way out of scarcity is contribution. And I went, ooh, okay, I need to contribute somehow. I think I had about $100 in my bank account and $400 worth of bills due that week. I was like, this does not equal the equation I'm hoping for. And I said, what could I do right now that would remind me how good of a position I'm really in? And my brain said, good of a position? You're down 300. Like, this is not a good position. I was like, no, but I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm strong. I'm alive. I can breathe. And my brain was like, yeah, but you owe money and you don't have it. And I'm like, okay, brain, we are battling here and it's not fun. I said, I'm just going to find a cause worthy and I'm going to do it. So I went online and I think I went to World Vision and I saw for $35, I could support a child's entire education for a month or a year or something. And I went, ooh, I'm going to do that. If I can send someone else to school for an entire year, my goodness, I'm abundant. So I did. I clicked the button. I clicked donate. I swiped my bank card, which also learned was not a good idea. Use a credit card and don't let it be attached to your bank account. But I swiped my bank card and I went, I did it. And then I refreshed my bank balance and went, what did I just do? That doesn't feel like the smartest thing in the world. I just, half my money's gone. What the heck? That, wow. Now I'm really stressed. That was silly. And then I thought about it and I started laughing and I said, wait a second, what an honor it is to have enough that I could do something good for someone for 12 months of their life. And it just causes a little bit of a hiccup in mine. Yeah, I've got a hiccup here. I got to solve it. I have to go figure out how to make some extra money quickly, but it's a hiccup in my life and it's life-changing in their life. And I went, boom, there's the abundance. It's a hiccup in my life and it's life-changing theirs. I went, that's really powerful. And I wrote that down. It's a hiccup in my life, but life-changing in theirs. Someone once told me, the things we call our biggest problems, someone else is on their knees praying for right now. I went, ooh. I was like, I don't know. I've had some interesting problems in my life. I got told I had 6 days left to live. I'm like, is someone really praying for that? And then I met a girl who, after her second double lung transplant from cystic fibrosis, went in for her open heart surgery to have the fluid drained out of her heart. And in the little picture I saw, I'd show it to you, it's graphic. I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'll let you imagine for now. It's her sitting in a little hospital gown with the front of it open just slightly in the middle. There's stitches straight down the middle of her chest. There's a tube coming straight out from where her heart is with fluid draining out of it. She has her glasses on and she has the biggest smile I've ever seen with two thumbs up that she made it. And I said, wow, being told I had 6 days left to live is way better than that. And it's not about comparison of better than worse. It's just realizing that young woman the night before was praying for 6 days. And I was told I had 6 days guaranteed by the doctor. And I went, whoa. And those moments, little by little by little, just remind you of how abundant it is. To answer your question, I've always been told when I was little that the more you give, the more you get. It always comes back to you. At some point, I just noticed too many people. And I don't like saying negative things about other humans because I tend to like humans in general, but there's some interesting humans with some pretty poor behavior that use catchphrases to try to manipulate people into buying stuff. And I watch too many of them use that phrase to convince people to buy stuff that they probably shouldn't have had to buy. And I sat down and I said, you know what? I'm just going to cut the second half of that phrase off. It's the more you give, the more you give. And when you find deep joy in giving, I guarantee you'll find so much joy you never imagined existed in your life. Just fall in love with giving. And if you fall in love with just giving, my goodness, your heart will open in ways you would have never imagined. But I agree. There is power in that phrase. It does come back to you. I just saw people use it, and you guys use it in the right way here. I just saw some scammy people use it in the wrong ways and just to hawk stuff from stage. And I was like, you know, that's just not cool. And so I just cut the second half off and say, no, give the give. If you're giving, expecting something in return, you're doing business, and that's a transaction. If you're giving just to give, my goodness, that's where the beauty is. There's also a layer of interaction. If I were to throw something back on the screen, when you think about how you interact with the world around, he said there's transactional. I give stuff purely to get something in return. There's relational. I give stuff because I deeply care about you. And then there's transformational. I believe what transforms the heart of the giver is when they elevate the transformational. It transforms who you are as a human when you decide to give just to give. And if you've ever had someone give you a gift and want nothing in return, it's transformational when you receive it. Someone changed my dad's life when he was 13 years old because they showed up and they gave him a basket full of food when his family was hungry. That transformed his life. They wanted nothing in return. They didn't even want to tell him who they were. They just showed up and gave. And that was a transformational experience. They didn't want a video of it. They didn't need pictures of it. They didn't need accolades from it. But because of that, he's gone on and inspired millions of people to feed millions of people every year because someone showed up and gave in a transformational way with nothing expected in return. And so I think there's something that magical happens when we just elevate transactional, relational, get up to transformational, and magic happens. And that's just giving to give.
Pretty amazing. You think that person might have only given 10 families food.
They might have only given one.
Yeah, that's true.
Just the one time they decided to help. And it just happened to be some kid who was going through a rough time.
Like a duck.
I just thought that conversation might fit well in this community.
Ah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm going to ask you a question to kind of shift the focus a little bit. I'm told that you're one of the people that really has work-life balance nailed, if that's true or not. But could you share a little bit about your boundaries or how you divide that up so you make sure that you have a balanced life in terms of family and self and work?
It's the simplest way to do it. I was hanging out with Dr. John DeMartini, and we were talking, and he's a fun guy. He tells me stories I would have never imagined by the way he dresses and shows up. he was hanging out with Willie Nelson one night, and I'm like, what? Come on. And he's like, no, it's true. And we were talking about what he teaches on values alignment. And I was lucky to hear these conversations when I was very young. And I was also lucky to be told at, you know, 23 years old that I had 6 days left to live due to malaria. And both of those things sped up, you know, it knocked me off my first mountain as the book. There's a book called Your Second Mountain. It knocked me off my first mountain. Let me draw this for people. It might make a little sense. And the first mountain we climb is about consuming. It's what we're trying to get from life. We're trying to get the appraisal, get the attention, get the connection, get the approval, get the money, get the accolades, get the whatever. Let me move this over real quick. So we're trying to get something. And at some point, doesn't matter your age or stage, something comes along and just whacks you off this first mountain. Can y'all be my sound effect real quick? I just need you to say, dump, dump, dump. Ready? So something comes along and knocks you off the first mountain.
Dump, dump, dump.
Nailed it into the valley of despair. And I say, this is when you recognize there's a void in your life. There's something missing. No matter how much you get, no matter how many times you get to the top of this mountain, it's just not doing it for you anymore. You hit that void and it's insatiable. It just is not filled. No matter how many times you climb the mountain of trying to consume, it just doesn't do it. And at some point you wander around this valley a while, and eventually you emerge on your second mountain. And your second mountain is about wanting to be consumed. Wanting to be consumed deeply in a community where you know your contribution matters. Where you care about them and they care about you. I was watching David Letterman interview Dave Chappelle on a Netflix series.
Great interview.
Isn't it?
Interview, yeah.
My favorite was how much Dave Chappelle is consumed by the community he lives in. He, when interviewers come to find him and the news comes to seek him out, his little community in Ohio protects him because he's a community member. About you having so much money. And Dave Chappelle said, I don't know. This is the first time any of us have had anything like this. We're all trying to figure it out together. And I went, ooh, I like where this conversation is headed. They're talking about deep community. They're talking about people caring about the person living next door again. They're talking about, he goes, but Dave, you're an African-American gentleman. Have you ever been pulled over by the police here and treated unfairly? And he said, if I'm treated unfairly, it's probably because I did something pretty stupid. But if I'm treated unfairly here, if he pulls me over, throw my hands on the steering wheel, 10 and 2, I lean out the window and go, it's me, Dave. What are you doing? I know the guy. He knows me. And I said, there's something in society that's been sped up where we've been pushing so much for bigger, faster, more, 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 that there's something special starting to come back towards community right now. And part of it's due to circumstance. Part of it's due to just a natural shift in values. Circling all the way back to your question, my number one value is love and relationship. My wife, if she needed me right now, I love y'all, but I would shut this off and go help her. She knows she's number one, period. There's zero things that come before her. Now, I worked hard enough before I met her to give myself the ability to do that. I know not everyone can do that because if they stop working, they lose their money and they can't pay their bills or provide food or take care of them. I worked hard enough to earn enough to say, listen, we don't have some huge amount of money. My dad gave me a gift at 18, money-wise. He says, here's the greatest gift I'll ever give you. You're on your own, figure it out. I was like, that's quite the gift. Thanks. But it was the greatest gift, to be honest, because it made me sit down and figure it out. He said, I don't care if you're homeless. That's fine. Be homeless for a few weeks. You'll figure it out. You know, you're smart. Work hard. You'll get it. I've had 3 jobs, stuffing boxes at a warehouse. I've had all kinds of stuff. Very lucky and blessed to be able to figure it out. And so since we got in that position, I made it a goal to get to a certain position so that by the time I was married, it said, hey, I could put my wife first, period. If I'm on stage in the middle of an event and we got paid a ton of money to be there, I'd hand the check back and walk off stage if my wife needed me. I'm okay. Totally okay with that, to put her first. Now that my little human's here, his name is Koa. I think he's one of the coolest little guys I've ever met. He's a lot of fun. Very insightful. He just watches and observes a lot. And he comes right up there too. Now it's my relationship and my family come number one. I will be there for them always. I will cancel stuff, move stuff, rearrange stuff. Doesn't matter. They come first and they know it. I have never missed a bath time for every day he's been alive. And I don't intend on missing. And it's little things like that. What inspired that was actually Garth Brooks. I watched his documentary and I had heard this about him before I saw the documentary. He was at the peak of his career selling out stadiums three nights in a row, 60,000, 100,000, 200,000 people. He did a concert in Central Park for 1 million people. Like this dude is a dude when it comes to music and selling out ticket arenas. When his three girls needed a dad, he shut down the whole tour and went home to be a dad. And he didn't come back until they were old enough that they were good to be on their own. I like that. And I said, I want to do that. How can I rearrange my puzzle so that I can be that kind of dad and that kind of husband? Now, him and his first wife didn't work out that well, but I said, I'm going to learn from that. What can I do differently? And so part of the things I do, I'm level one and level two certified in Gottman relationships programs. They're marriage and family therapists, and they've been doing research on couples for over 35 years, 3,000 couples. I take courses like that and go get certified just so I can learn ahead of time what it takes to have a great relationship. And I practice regularly and daily. When it comes to, you know, if we looked at our values, it's love and relationship. Business doesn't show up on my list until probably like number 8 or 9. It's pretty far down there. And so with that, I get to business in the time where business needs to go. How I did that was very intentional. I sat down when I got told I had 6 days left to live, and I said I was going to design what I called my ideal day. I didn't come up with the concept. I had heard about it from someone else, but it was just titled Your Ideal Day, Your Perfect Day. And I sat down and I said, if I got to live one more day past day number 6, and the only reason the doctor told me 6 days, because I had 55,000 parasites per one red blood cell. And he said, the way they double and multiply, you got about 6 days left. Now I was stubborn and I said, 6 days till what? He said, till your body can't function. I was like, and? He's like, you die. I was like, not cool. And that was not my plan in life. So I sat down and cried a little because I was scared. I called my mom, or I called my dad first. He said, buddy, the power of the mind is unbelievable. If you believe the medicine will heal you, take it. If you believe your body will heal itself, do it. Whatever you believe with total certainty, do it now. You will be fine. I hung up the phone, and that was the first time in my life I said, Dad, that didn't help. You basically gave me a do it and you might work, don't do it and it might work. I'm not sure, go for it. Just do it with certainty. I called mom. I love it, but it just didn't solve the situation. I called my mom and she gave me the best mom response I ever got, which was, honey, I'm on my way. I went, oh crap. My mom's never been out of the country before. And she's about to fly to Uganda to come find me in the middle of a little pineapple village, smack dab, you know, in the middle of the country. Holy Moses, I'm going to be in trouble when she gets here. So she gave me some inspiration to get well quick. Otherwise she was going to get me by the time she arrived. And while I was there for 6 days lying in a hospital, which it's rough there, their hospitals are not in the villages. Their hospitals are not fully equipped. I wrote out my vision for my ideal day, how I wanted to live. And at that moment, what I came up with was kind of like in Australia, they work to live instead of live to work. I was going to design the life I wanted to live and create a business that'll work around it, not find a business I want to have and force my life to fit around it. And so I sat down and I said, what time do I want to wake up? Who do I want to be with? How do I want to feel? What kind of projects do I want to work on all day? What kind of person do I want to be? What kind of impact do I want to make in the world? You know, what do I want to do that'll matter beyond me physically being here anymore? And I came up with all these ideas and all these thoughts, and I wrote it all down and I started visualizing it every day so that I had a compelling future to live for. I had the worst 11 days of my life taking the medication to try to heal from that. Like I was out. I had vertigo. I was needing to crawl down the hallway to go to the bathroom. Like it was bad, not fun. But when I got to the other side, I think I lost like 27 pounds in a week or something. Like my body was deteriorating really quickly. It was not good. And when I came back, I just promised myself, I was like, you know what? I know how close death feels. And if I'm going to taste life, I'm going to start today. And the whole thing became about how do I turn that ideal day into reality? I have what I wrote in the journal, and it took me about 18 months before I could get one ideal day, just one day that was everything I wrote down. And I tasted it. And I said, if I can get one day of what I wrote down, I bet I can get another because I know it's possible now. And every year I started to work a little more, a little more, a little more until it took a while, but eventually it got to where I could get a month of my ideal day. I was like, oh, that was amazing. And then 3 months and then 4 months. And at this point in our life, I'm very, very privileged. We work a lot, but at this point, you know, we get to live our ideal day and it became our ideal day. It's not just mine. You know, it's my wife and I sat down and said, how do we want to live our day-to-day life? And we mapped that out and we decided what path we want to walk on. We decided who we want to be around. We decided where on earth we would like to do it from. And right now, we moved to Puerto Rico. We live on the beach here. We go walking to see, we call them our cows. They're not our cows. They're just the cows at the end of the path we go walk to every day and say hi to them and feed them grass and mangoes. And it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm only 36 years old and it feels like an unbelievable honor and blessing to be able to have done all that between, you know, just a decade ago, I wasn't anywhere close to this. And it was just knowing where I wanted to go and working towards it every day. And so how I have that balance, it started from a vision that existed a decade or so ago. And it was just saying, that's how I want to live my life. I want my life designed and my business to fit around my life, not a business and my life crammed around the business.
That's very cool. Thank you. You know, what's very interesting, when I went away to college, my dad said, if you need a helping hand, look at the end of your own arm. That's where it's going to come from, you know? So I got the same message. That's funny.
I went away to college, my dad. I said, I'm never coming home. This place is so much fun. He said, sure it is. When you run out of money, you'll be back. I was back for this weekend.
Aw.
One of the questions someone asked, we've just got a few minutes left here. They said, would like some of your insights on networking strategies during COVID when you can't meet in person, attend networking events. How do you grow your business and find new opportunities like in the job market, contract work, et cetera, clients, et cetera, networking and when everyone's sequestered at home?
Amazing. I believe you have to build your peer group on purpose. It's not something that happens by accident. I have a little philosophy. I'm gonna see if I drag this in here. Learn it, live it, give it. And if you think of this, there's a 33% gap we could create there, where if we put 33% in each of those categories, you'd have 33% of the peer group you've purposely created that you'd want to learn from. People who are ahead of you on the path in some topic or category of life, and you'd like to learn from these people because they've done it. They're doing it. They can show you. 33% would be at the exact same moment of life with you. They're in the same game. They're in the same stage. They're in the same moment. We have a four-month-old. We have a friend who has a four-month-old. They're our peer group right now. What's working and what's not? We're trading information back and forth. And 33% might be five steps behind you. That just means you're a few steps ahead of them on the path and you can tell them, hey, watch out for this branch that's coming up. It might be a low branch or watch out for that dip in the road. There's something coming up for you. And if you purposely outline the 33%, I have a friend of mine who did this and it landed him a $10 million deal. And he sat down and he said, who would I love to connect with? At the time he was studying the stock market and he said, Jim Cramer. The guy on TV, I'd love to just sit down with him and pick his brain. That's what he said. And he was in New York City. And he said, if I were to write this guy an email right now, what are the odds he's going to write me back and say, yeah, let's go for coffee. Why not? He goes, pretty slim. He's a famous guy on TV. I'm sure he gets hit up all the time. It's kind of hard to get a hold of him. But he said, but I want to talk with him. I want to connect with him. I want to have him as a peer. So he wrote him on his list as someone to learn from. He sat down. He said, I'm going to come up with 10 ideas every day of how to add genuine value to this person's life. genuine value, tangible value. And every day for 30 days, he wrote down 10 ways he could add genuine value to Jim Cramer's life. He wrote it down every day, 10 ways. Just came up with whatever he could think up. At the end of 30 days, he had 300 options. He circled the top three, picked his favorite one, and went for it. His favorite one was, here's 10 topics I wish Jim Cramer would blog about because I would love to read his thoughts on this information. He came up with a list of 10 topics. He did 10 SEO-friendly titles that he researched online. He went and sourced the data and information that he would include in the article, and he compacted it into one document. He wrote an email that said, "Dear Jim, I'd love to connect with you. I'm a huge fan of your blog, huge fan of your show. I sat down and thought up a few ways that I might be able to add value to your life in hopes that it's valuable enough that you may want to even grab a coffee sometime. Here's what I came up with," you know, and signed his name. And it just had 10 titles, 10 organized, well thought out blocks of content, really well thought through and organized. He got an email back in 10 minutes that says, "Would you be willing to write these for our blog? We love what you've put together." He said, "I would be honored to write these for your blog if I can, you know, work together." So they hired him to come blog for them. He got to go down to the studio, meet Jim, walk around and look at everything. Every day while he was there, he said, "What's 10 ways I could make this place better?" Every day while he was there working. One day he noticed a piece of technology, software that was missing. And instead of just saying, "Hey, software is missing, guys," he went, no, I'm gonna do something about it. He went and found a team, hired somebody, had the software created, brought it back to Jim's team and said, "Hey, I noticed you were missing the software. I literally had it made for you. If it's a value, you know, let me know." They bought that software from him for $10 million. I was like, dude, talk about an unbelievable way to network. That is cool. I sat back and said, okay, that sounds a little complicated though. How could I do that? And I sat down at the time I was doing one-on-one coaching and I said, I'd love to coach more tech entrepreneurs with startups. Because in my business, I just financially looked at the trajectory. There's no huge, you know, unicorn type growth that happens in my type of business. It's a service business. It could be steady growth, but it's never going to go to $1 billion in 3 weeks kind of thing. But their companies do, some of them. I said, I would love to share my value with them in return for a little bit of equity to see if I could ride those waves with any of them. And I said, well, where in the world do they exist? Like, well, San Francisco. And at that time, this part won't work in a COVID-friendly environment. But at that time, I asked my wife, I said, do you want to go and move to San Francisco for 2.5 months? She said, for what? I said, I want to meet people. She goes, you're literally going to move to a city to meet people? I said, absolutely. That's where the majority of them are. I want to go there. I want to meet these people. I want to shake hands and have dinner and just connect with them as a friend. And we did. We moved to Sausalito. I reached out to a few friends and asked them if they'd be willing to introduce me to people while I was in town. And they helped us create a whole tribe. So many weeks later, I had dinner with Sergey Brin and his family. And I was like, what the? I mean, we were at family dinner with his girlfriend, mom, brother. I'm like, I felt like we were imposing, to be honest. It was a Sunday night family dinner and we were sitting there. But my friend said, hey, you wanted to meet people? Let me introduce you to people. I was lying on a mat. They have this term called a cuddle puddle. I had to figure these things out when I was in San Francisco. So I was lying on a mat in a church near Dolores Park, going through a Wim Hof training where he put us in an ice bath, taught us how to breathe properly. And some dude with long hair is lying next to me, just chatting about adventures and snowboarding and sailing. And he stands up and walks away. And my friend goes, oh, I see you met the PayPal guy. And I was like, he worked at PayPal? He's like, no, he's one of the founders. It's like, you got to be kidding me. We never talked about that, but I do want to go sailing with him. As much as I don't like water, he made it sound really cool. And so all those connections happen for two things. One, finding a way to add value. and really doing the work, 10 a day, 10 ways to add value every single day, genuine, true value that they find valuable, what they need, want, and desire. Two, being willing to go there, being willing to just show up and go there. I have a friend who gets paid $1 million a year by one of those tech entrepreneurs to be his performance coach. And I said, how did you land him as a client? He said, I put on my smartest out, he's British. I put on my smartest outfit, which is his best outfit. He literally packed a bag, put on his smartest outfit, flew to San Francisco. And he said, if I was a tech billionaire, where would I hang out? And he just kept going to all those places until he actually ran into a few of them, showed him the type of results he could help create. And one of them hired him at 26 years old for $1 million a year to work with him personally, and has worked with him every year since. I was like, holy Moses, there's something to this. You got to be there. Now, how can you digitally do that is the question. What I found is Seth Godin, the marketer, has this concept of people like us do things like this, or people like us do things like that. Communities of people do very consistent and predictable things. When you can start to get to know purely from a transformational value add only position, when you start to get to know this community by going there, participating, adding value in any way you can, you'll start to hear the threads of what they need, want, and desire. As you hear that, make it a mission of yours to just come up with 10 ways a day you could help, find the best one and deliver. And all of a sudden you became a valuable member of the community purely for just wanting to share and help. How you can do that digitally? Same thing. Where do they hang out online? Where's their community? Right now, we have one of the coolest situations on earth, which is the ability to connect with anyone via social media. Like, I've had chats with Mark Cuban on Twitter just because I kept sending him questions about certain things. And I was like, he's a hard guy to get a hold of. And at some point, he gave me 37 seconds of his life and answered me. And I went, ooh. And I shot him something back of value. And he went, wow, I'd like to know more. And it turned into a whole conversation. But it was me adding value. And so that little transformational pyramid, get out of transactional. Don't try to trade them. Relational is getting to know their needs, wants, and desires. Transformational is being willing to deliver regardless if you get anything back or not. And so how you do that, track them down, understand their needs, wants, and desires, choose to find a way to add value, come up with the list 10 ways every day for 30 days, pick your top three, execute on one, add genuine value from a transformational mindset where you want nothing in return, and watch what happens. Because when people feel that you've genuinely added value without asking for a thing, magic tends to happen.
I would say, I just want to underline how true that is, because like you, I get a lot of emails of people asking me for things. And in the middle of like that 150 to 200 emails, there'll be one that just offers me something. And I have a totally different emotional response. Yeah. All of a sudden, like, wow, I want to get to know this person. So that's totally makes total sense.
And if they've done their homework really well and they offer something of genuine deep value, it's almost mind blowing. Because the question is like, how did they even know I need, or I was interested in that, or I was reading about that? How did they even know that?
Right.
And one of my friends who's really big on social media, I tease him a little. It sounds creepy. His name's Gary, but he loves it because you can follow someone on Twitter, and after 200 tweets, you know what they're up to. You know what they're interested in. You know what they're curious about. Follow them on Instagram. Watch their stories. Watch what they click, their food they hit, and all this stuff. Text them. I see you like pizza. You know, I found this New York pizza place, one of the best in the world. I sent you a certificate. I know you live three states over, but if you call them and tell them my name, they're going to FedEx you one. I just wanted you to enjoy it on me. I guarantee someone will call you back if it's really good pizza.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, we've run out of time. I'm sure you have things that you offer that people could join and be part of in courses and classes. How do people connect with you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, just find me on Instagram. I mean, it's pretty easy. If just at my name on Instagram, my name is a little tricky. It's J-A-I-R-E-K-R-O-B-B-I-N-S. But just find me on Instagram. We post every day. my purpose on Instagram is just to reach the people that need it most at the moment they need it with the message they need. So we push out good thoughts every day in hopes to just land in their lap at the moment they need it most. If you know, just on there, it just come connect with me and hang out. And if there's something you need or want, just message me and I'll shoot you back a message and we'll sort that out.
Well, I want to thank you. And I'll share that you came highly recommended from everyone I ever talked about who'd work with you. I knew you were brilliant. But what I learned today, Jarek, was what a huge heart you have. What a huge humanity you are and the wisdom you have and how you've embodied it and how you literally live from that transformational place. And so I just, I love you for that. So thank you very much for being who you are and for sharing all this with our community.
Yeah, it was great. If you ever need an extra mom, I'm totally willing to adopt you.
Oh. Well, mine passed away this last year, so it never hurts to have an extra mom at this point.
Sorry about that. Well, I'm here.
Beautiful. Thank you.
If you need anything from us, just let me know.
I might take you up on it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Love you and thank you. Tell Amanda and the baby hi.
I will. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and humbling to be here. Thank you very, very much for letting me share.
Well, thank you. A lot of value. Take care, my friend.
Bye, everyone.